Welcome to the Cyber Podcast, everyone. My name is Christoph Limpler, and today's guest is Kevin Christ. Kevin is a repeat guest, and we had him on the show a few weeks ago, actually, to talk about what it means to be a CIO and how to start preparing to become a CIO. So if you haven't listened to that episode yet, I highly recommend that you do that because this episode will build on top of that, and it is the second episode in a three-part series. So in this episode, we're going to continue that conversation, but this time we're going to answer the main question of, what can I do in my early career to set myself up for this type of leadership position? So if you're relatively early in your IT career and you have aspirations to become a CIO, CTO, et cetera, this is definitely not an episode that you'll want to miss. Now, I already introduced Kevin in our prior episode, so I won't do that again here. But rest assured that Kevin has a tremendous amount of experience working with CIOs and as CIO. So this is going to be directly actionable information, and I'm really excited to get started. Kevin, welcome back to the Cyber Podcast, and thanks again for being here.
Thank you very much, Christopher. I'm glad to be back.
So one of the last questions that I asked you in the prior episode was about the typical paths to becoming CIO. So let's pick back up where we left off. You had mentioned that there are typically two main roads to CIO. There's one from within IT, and then there's another from other business functions. And while we can assume that most listeners to this podcast are probably within IT, can you explain a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Sure. CIOs often rise from within the ranks. You start out as a developer, you start out in IT operations, and you go through a series of jobs in your career, and one day you're leading the IT function. So that is one route. There is also a very significant number of CIOs that grow up in finance or grow up in operations, and as they rotate around business functions at the top, it's their turn to lead IT. And I think I mentioned last time, you know, those folks have been handed the keys to a Ferrari and never necessarily learned to drive a stick shift. So they have a technology learning curve, where the technologists often have a bit of a business learning curve.
And a lot of technologists I know don't like the business side, at least not initially, and they'd much rather stick to the technical side. And frankly, if that's what they want to do the rest of their lives, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if they aspire to be CIOs, how would you recommend that they fill that knowledge gap and also learn the business side in addition to the technical side?
Sure. And I want to agree with you, first of all. There is absolutely a rich career path for someone who wants to be a technologist and a technology SME. But if that is your aspiration solely, then you're not going to become a CIO, because you really are part of the business leadership team in the CIO chair, who happens to run the technology function. If you are a technologist who can't talk about the business, then you're probably, you know, not going to get the job. And so, you know, the advice for CIOs really is, aspiring CIOs, you have to learn the business. You have to understand, you know, how do we make money as a business? What is the value chain? What, you know, who are our customers, and who are our competitors, and where do we stand against those competitors? Because as CIO, you're going to be in leadership meetings talking about, what do we have to do because company X is doing Y, we're changing our business strategy, and that's going to ripple through our technology platforms to support that innovation. So, you know your product, know your services evolving. You know, if you're in retail, go out and visit the stores, understand what your footprint looks like, and certainly keep track of how the business is performing financially. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Is it profitable? You know, really learn. The sole purpose of IT is to support the business outcome. So understand, you know, the objective, the business, so that you can serve it better with technology.
And before we started recording the episode, we were just talking about different stocks and growth in stocks for certain companies, especially during these times. And so one of the things that you can also do, of course, is reading different financial reports. And, you know, especially if it's a publicly traded company, all of that information is publicly available. Everybody can look it up and look at it. And I think that's a pretty important part of understanding your business and understanding what drives some of the short-term as well as long-term decisions. And that's something that everybody can do. It may not be interesting to everyone, but, you know, to your point, if it's something where you want to go down that path and you want to be involved, you have to understand how some of those decisions are made and why. Are there any other recommendations you have in terms of information that people can seek out, even if it's a privately traded company? How does that work? What kinds of things can people seek out to understand the business side a little bit more?
Sure. I think even on privately held companies, there's a website, and it's going to describe some aspects of the business. It is almost certainly going to carry press releases. And you ought to watch the press releases in your company, at least, if not your competitors or companies you might aspire to join. If it's worthy of a press release, it's important to the company, and they decided they needed to make an announcement to the world. You can set Google alerts or some other news feed where if there is news about your company, positive or negative, it's going to show up, you know, on your automatic feed within minutes, as opposed to hoping that you take notice of it incidentally. On public companies, one of the things everybody knows about annual reports, or, you know, once a year they publish their financials and some commentary, and there's quarterly reports, and that's what people typically look for. Most public companies and many private companies have, you know, some equivalent of Investor Day, and there's typically a PowerPoint or PDF presentation that really describes the business footprint very well. And, you know, when I walk into a new company, the first thing I do is look for investor reports. It'll talk about the business segments. It'll talk about what's growing, what's shrinking. It'll talk about key strategies. It really is this incredible 101 introduction to a company that's written, you know, to an audience of investors that may or may not be, you know, highly financially focused, but need to understand the business concept. So I'm a big fan of investor reports.
Yeah, those are really good points. And it never hurts to ask either. If there's something you want clarification on, maybe you don't understand some of the financial data points or what they mean. One, you can try to look it up, but two, maybe ask your manager or ask somebody else on the team that they may understand what that means, and they can try to help you understand that as well. So those are really good points.
Yeah, I think, I like that. And I would also say one of the things that you really ought to do is try to build relationships outside of technology. You may be working on sales and marketing applications. You may be working on, you know, HR applications, but get to know the people that you're serving and ask them what they would suggest you read, because they'll look at it differently even than your technology manager. And it will help you learn the business by spending time with them in their function. You know, sure, go to lunch with your friends in technology, but go to lunch with your friends on the business side too, in a business unit, and learn about them. One of the CIOs that I worked with years ago, and many CIOs give the advice, you know, this learn the business advice. But he was in retail, and he went to China for 3 weeks. And visited the docks where they ship from, visited, looked at the supply chain that got product to the dock, visited the factories and villages that were making the product to put in the shipping containers to send back. And by seeing the business, he understood the business problems and opportunities so much better, and then brought creative ideas on how to bring automation to the table. Of course, as a young analyst, you don't get to raise your hand and say, send me to China. But but look for the opportunities to say, can I go spend a couple hours? Can I go spend a day with the folks that I'm working with to better understand what they do? And instead of, you know, thinking about it as, you know, data fields, you understand that field really means, you know, what it means as a business concept, and you can do much better for them.
And if that's such a great point, because if you're working within your team, you're working within your function, you're typically always thinking about your work from the scope of that function, not necessarily from the overall vision of what's going on. And so as you start to understand those different departments, those different pillars, and what they're trying to achieve, what their challenges are, then that can completely change the perspective of your own function and what you're working on. And so maybe you can bring in and think outside the box and bring in some of that perspective to your team and the projects that you're working on and look at it from that different perspective. So that can be incredibly powerful advice, actually.
Sure. And as a matter of fact, to go even further, so you're bringing, you know, we're talking about bringing the insights from one function into technology. But over the course of your career, let's say the first 5 or 10 years, if you're able to work in, you know, 3 or 4 business functions or SBUs, you are one of the few people in the company that has the vision to connect the dots about how they interact with each other. Sometimes you will see things in engineering and how it affects manufacturing and how manufacturing affects product engineering or sales quotes and estimates in ways that they can't see themselves if you really take the opportunity to learn what's going on in these various functions and processes.
And what you're talking about here applies directly to the IT facet as well, right? Not just outside into the business side of things, but also within IT. But if you've got somebody who's earlier on in their IT career, what would you say are some of the main pillars that they would need to know as CIOs and therefore that they should focus on, right? Are we talking about learning project management, talent management? Which ones would you say are the most important for them to focus on?
And I'll start with a story on this one. And I had a woman approach me, actually her CIO introduced me to her, and she was a fairly senior, you know, direct report to the CIO. And they said, you know, okay, she's ready to be a CIO somewhere. Can you help her? And I sat down with her and I said, you know, tell me your story. She says, I've been doing big Oracle implementations for, you know, the last 15 years. I'd really like to get into a company that you know, is an Oracle company or an Oracle platform company and really apply my knowledge. And I said, okay, other than Oracle implementations, what have you done? She says, that's what I've done. It's like I'm the goddess of Oracle implementations. And my comment to her was, you know, as CIO, you own security, you own infrastructure, you own vendor management, you own, you know, innovation, you own, you know, day-to-day operations and support. I said, my advice to you is in your next position or even in your current company, find, you know, go do something you're not good at. Learn the rest of IT because as CIO, you own all of it. And so my advice is not necessarily which function is the best, but if you want to be an application specialist only, you're not necessarily going to be a CIO. If you're a security specialist or a vendor management specialist or a project management specialist, you're not necessarily going to become a CIO. You have to learn it well enough and then seek the rotation and move back to the steep learning curve in the area of discomfort so that over the course of your career, you've developed a perspective on running all of IT as opposed to being, you know, incredibly deep and valuable in one area. It makes you valuable, but it doesn't necessarily make you, you know, versatile and give you the broader perspective of what it takes to be successful as a CIO.
And to your point from earlier as well, you may not be in a position to where you can raise your hand and say, send me to China, let me look at the supply chain, or send me to this department, I want to talk to people there and see how that works. And so if you're thinking about rotating across some of those technology roles, just so you can get that exposure and not get pigeonholed into one specific area, how do you recommend that people do that? I know you mentioned maybe going out to lunch with people in those different departments and picking their brain, but what are some of the other tips and advice that you might give to people so that they do have that opportunity presented to them?
Sure. I think a lot of companies have, you know, some kind of a career planning and management process, and you lay out your goals and aspirations, and you meet with your manager or your counselor or your mentor, and they give you their advice on, you know, how that aligns, you know, how do you achieve that, or how do you modify that because it doesn't make sense. And I think you have to start with the understanding that, you know, you own the responsibility to manage your career. If you always go where you're sent, you're going to end up wherever you end up. But if your aspiration and you're clear with the person who's providing you counseling and guidance is, I want to build a broad understanding. I want to, you know, I've spent my time in infrastructure. I really want to learn and understand security. Let them help you figure out how to get those placements in your company. And rarely will they say, you know, when you find somebody says, no, I refuse to transfer you. It's more rare actually for them to be approached by somebody that says, hey, I'm really good at this. I'm comfortable at this, you know, throw me into the deep end of another pool and I'm going to climb out again, you know, learn to swim all over again. And, but start out with that as your aspiration, watch, you know, internal job postings and job boards and, you know, see when there's something that you feel like, might round out your skill set. And just like I said, get to know people outside of your outside of the IT function. Get to know people outside of your pillar of technology. You know, go have lunch with, you know, the security folks and ask them about, you know, how did they get into it and how would they recommend, you know, what should you read to be an interesting candidate for security, and seek the guidance of those that are in the places you want to be. and really do what you can to accelerate your learning curve and find, you know, sponsorship to pull you into these opportunities.
I read an article this morning and I thought it was perfect timing that was giving tips on how to become a CISO. And one of the main skills that's also very relevant to that answer is to develop better communication skills. And you've also mentioned this before, but how does one learn to communicate better? Because it can be so fundamental to helping you develop that career path.
Sure. I think, you know, communications are critical in all of business and certainly true for IT professionals. You are going to be interviewing business people to understand how things work and how things need to work in the future. You are potentially going to be leading workshops. You're going to be making presentations, asking to get funding for a particular project or opportunity. And all those things are about communications and influence. You know, there's an old joke that, you know, how do you know when a technologist is an extrovert? And the answer is because they look at your shoes when they're talking to you instead of their own. And, you know, I also tell that joke about engineers and accountants, by the way. But, you know, it's a lot of people are drawn to technology, not particularly because they like talking to audiences and other people. And yet realize if you aspire to be a CIO or a senior executive, it's going to be a huge part of your responsibility. And so, you know, I know a number of people that have gotten involved in things like Toastmasters and you know, a group that basically meets and makes presentations to each other and critiques in a friendly environment, but builds your skills. So learn how to communicate and influence. There are classes about how to bring storytelling into the business environment. And, you know, if that sounds incredibly uncomfortable to you, then you should take the class because it needs to become comfortable. I'd say the other thing everybody needs to learn, and, you know, I have two sons that are engineers, and I said, you know, the one thing, civil engineers, I said, the one thing you need to learn is you need to take one accounting class, and you need to learn the language of business, which is accounting and finance. And if you don't know the difference between revenues and profits and income, if you don't know the difference between operating costs and capital costs, if you don't know how to build a business case, then you've set a ceiling on your ability to join the leadership ranks. Because when you go to ask for money for a project and you say, you know, I need to get funding for this $1.5 million project, first thing they say is that operating dollars or capital dollars? Because they get funded completely different and they get recognized in your financials completely different. And if you don't even understand the question, then you're gonna struggle. So there, you know, you could take a class for a semester, you could, you know, buy a book, Finance for the Non-Financial Executive, and that will give you, you know, a fair amount of insights without having to move all the debits and credits around like an accountant. But learn that language, focus on communication, focus on, there's a whole nother side of soft skills, and that's, you know, developing the people around you. And really, you know, part of being a CIO and a leader is, you know, how do I help the people that are coming up behind me? How do I help develop them? How do I help them thrive? So be a good coach, be a good counselor, be great at talent management with the people around you. Because that is expected of leaders. You never are going to do it all by yourself. You need to assemble a great team to go, you know, conquer mountains. And one CIO without, you know, a strong team behind them is going to fail.
I ended up taking a couple of accounting classes in college since I minored in business. And then I've been at meetings before with CFOs or accountants where they've mentioned certain things and didn't necessarily expect me to understand what that meant. But then when they realized that I understood those words, what that meant and how that worked out, that's something that can help you stand out from the crowd, especially if you're applying for positions or you're trying to rise their ranks quickly with wherever you are. That can be something that helps you stand out, right? Because it shows that you've invested in understanding the business, again, going back to those points, but also you've invested in understanding the math behind it, the finance behind it, and so on. So that's really good advice. And I was going to recommend Toastmasters as well. I've been part of Toastmasters in the past. If it's something where you're not comfortable speaking or developing presentations, that can be a very safe environment to learn that. Mm-hmm. And again, to your point, if you're not comfortable with it, probably means you need it even more. Just like what people say about meditation. If you don't have the time to meditate, that means you need to meditate as soon as possible. So it kind of plays into that. Something else that you've mentioned, Kevin, in our research prior to this episode is don't hide from the spotlight, but don't shine it on yourself either. Can you please elaborate on what you mean by that?
Yeah, it's this is more about human nature, I think, than anything to do with technology. But if you are always out there seeking attention and you are always saying, hey, look what great things I did, you're going to suffer some rejection and negative feedback from people who don't like your arrogance or your self-promotion. And so if you're out, pounding your own chest saying, look at how great I am, you're going to create opponents that didn't have any reason to oppose you before. At the same time, don't hide from the spotlight. If you are asked or have the opportunity to go make the presentation to a group of managers or directors in your company, take that opportunity. Let them learn who you are. If there's a chance to, volunteer for some extracurriculars within your organization where you can take a leadership role. It may be a community service day where you're going out and, painting houses or something for people that can't afford to do it themselves. Well, if you take on a leadership role, you organize the supplies, you organize the work crews, you motivate people and, you bring them refreshments when they're, out there in the hot Texas sun or what have you. It's you demonstrate leadership in an in a way that's very different than doing IT projects, but it translates. People see in you someone who is organized, who is prepared, who is encouraging. So when spotlight opportunities arise, seize them. But again, then after you do that, don't run around and say, hey, look what a great job I did on right. Volunteer day. Let them have those conversations with each other. So, do great, be visible when the opportunity presents itself, and don't be a self-promoter.
Something else that you mentioned again when we were preparing for the episode is that no matter how brilliant you are, you can't do it all. And I see that as meaning a few different things. One of those things would be finding mentors. And then another one, of course, is learning how to build a team, learning how to build a support system, et cetera. But starting with number one of finding mentors, this is advice that I give a lot as well and that I hear people giving all the time. But how does one go about finding a mentor in the first place?
There's a number of ways. There are sometimes formal mentoring programs within companies. And you'll be assigned a mentor. And ideally that works. But the problem with an assigned mentor is you may or may not have great chemistry. Your vision of yourself and whatever the company assigned them to, you may or may not align. But that's one route is, an assigned mentor. Another route is people are often flattered that you value their advice enough that you would go ask them, directly. I'm really looking for a mentor. I think you would be very good for me. Do you think that, we could, talk once a month and, spend half an hour on the phone or grab a lunch or whatever and would really like to seek your advice? That mentor is better if they're not in your direct line of reports. When you're asking your boss for coaching and at the end of the year they're evaluating you, you're not going to be very open about your development needs. And they may have more restrictions on what they feel comfortable sharing. So try and find somebody out of your direct chain of command. And try and find somebody who you think is well respected. It's like any mentor is not necessarily good just because they're 10 years older than you are. You want to find someone who has been successful, who is ideally blazing the trail that you hope to follow. And you want the advice of someone who has been where you want to go. And so, look for, you might even ask, some people first, who do you think might be a good mentor for XYZ and see what names come up before you actually approach them and ask. The last thing about mentoring is there are certainly mentors within your organization, but there is nothing wrong with mentors outside of your organization either. You then have someone who is emotionally disconnected, who is very, very low risk relationship. Like one of the professional organizations I'm in, Society for Information Management, SIM, basically has CIOs volunteer and raise their hands and say, I would be glad to be a mentor. In some cases, they're mentoring students at a university in the area, University of Texas at Dallas. In some cases, they're mentoring mid-career people in other organizations. But you will see professional organizations sometimes offering mentoring programs and alignment as well. So lots of different places you can look. I think the most important thing is someone you respect who is accomplish some of the things that you hope to, that can give you good coaching. and really is interested in doing it. If someone says, no, I'm really not interested in mentoring, don't spend time talking them into it. If they don't want to be a mentor, they're not going to be a good mentor.
Right. Probably not a good sign of things to come.
Exactly.
And then to the second point of going about learning how to build a team and building a support system, you know, as you were saying, having a mentor that's been there, that's done that is a resource you can certainly lean on, and they can teach you a lot about how to do that. What are some of the ways that you might recommend somebody go about learning how to build that team, learning how to build that support system, which is so critical to not just being a CIO, but really a manager in general?
I think you look for, I mean, there's dozens and dozens of books written on team building and team chemistry. There are podcasts out there. There are YouTube videos out there. And I think oftentimes they're, you know, the tag you're looking for is teamwork. Oftentimes the tag you're looking for is leadership. But you have to educate yourself in terms of what are the styles of leadership and what are the styles of team building. I think you have to be authentic as well. Some people are incredibly collaborative by nature and are very much a leader from among the team. Some people are very, you know, autocratic and have trouble you being one of the gang. And so I think you have to look in the mirror and say, who am I? Who do I want to be? And how do I, you know, learn a style of leadership that fits me? And I'll give you an example. This is less about leadership than work style. But early in my career, I worked for two different partners at Touche Ross, which later became part of Deloitte. One of them was an incredibly visual person. And, you know, and this is back in the late 1980s. So putting together a PowerPoint slide, there was no PowerPoint. It was an effort to make something visual at the time. But he spent time on the sizes of the shape and the colors and the emotional reactions of an audience, and used to drive me nuts because I'd go through four iterations of a document to get the right color of orange to make Doug happy. And it's like, but it worked. And, you know, sometimes our clients were in the media and that color mattered a lot to them. Well, I worked for another partner named Jim. And Jim, you know, used to, you know, if he built a spreadsheet, you know, the first tab of the spreadsheet was the summary, but there were 35 tabs behind it of everything that built up to it. And Jim was meticulous. Jim was thorough. We used to joke that there were only two workaholics in our office and both of them were Jim. I mean, he was just an intense guy. And at the end of the day, when I look back on those two experiences, I learned a lot from Doug about how to build a compelling visual presentation. I learned a lot from Jim about how to be meticulous and thorough. And the extreme, you know, I talked about Jim's spreadsheets. We used to joke with Doug, you know, it's like, hey, if you label the axis on your graph, it's too wordy. He hated words on his pages and his slides. And so at the end of the day, I became a better business person because I learned things from both their bag of tricks. I'll never be as thorough and detailed as Jim. I'll never be as visual as Doug. But I will be a better me because I built these different skills from different people. And I think, you know, when you look at mentoring, when you look at teams, you want, you know, a team of diverse people. You want the crew from the Italian Job where, you know, you got one safe cracker and one driver or whatever that can bring all the right skills together as a group.
And it's something that can feel incredibly unnatural because you're having to bring in people who know or have certain skill sets that you lack. And so they fill in your weaknesses. That's where their strengths are. And that can feel weird, right? Because I don't even know how to describe it, but a lot of times people might gravitate towards other people who are similar to them and have similar skill sets, but then you lack that learning experience that you're describing where they have the strengths where you lack them. And so one of the things I'll say from personal experience is that the bad news about learning how to build teams, building support system, et cetera, is that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. The good news is that you're going to learn from those mistakes, and there's just no way around it. That's how it works. And so I hope that doesn't discourage anybody from doing it. I think it's an incredibly positive learning experience, even if sometimes it feels extremely uncomfortable, and it's something that we all have to go through. And that, like you said, at the end of the day, you become better as a result of it. It enhances your career long-term. So yeah, definitely very good advice.
You have to remember your job at the end of the day is to deliver a solution that delivers, you know, the business results that have been promised. And it has to be secure and it has to be robust and it has to be a good user experience and it has to be all these different things. And you may have the capability and capacity to be great at any of those things. You don't have the capability and capacity most likely to be great at all of those things. And if you have become, you know, outstanding at user experience, you probably need help on the security side. If you've become outstanding at security, you may need help on the user experience side. And so if you say, you know what, I could learn all that. Well, you could, but you don't have enough time to learn all of that. And so you're either going to put out an inferior solution or you're going to take too long. And so it's a matter of, again, assembling the mix of people. And, you know, if you aspire to be a future leader, the skill you need is not to be the best at anything. It's to be able to identify who is good at anything, at the various mm-hmm. things that you need, and to give them the tools they need and to remove the barriers that might keep them from getting it done. And then learn to empower and trust them versus feeling like I have to personally understand every piece of this solution or I don't trust. If you can't get a team that you trust together, you are going to impair deeply your ability to deliver anything.
Kevin, I think that's a great note to stop on, and I really appreciate you coming on the show again. It's always so much fun to have you on here and share your wisdom. And we've talked about doing a third episode, actually, which would, again, be a follow-up to this second episode, except focusing more on people who are mid-career and looking to enhance those chances of becoming CIOs. But in the meantime, if somebody's listening and has any follow-up questions or they want to connect with you, how might you recommend that they do that?
Sure. The best way for me is probably email kevin.christ, C-H-R-I-S-T, at concentre.net, concentre.net. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and those would probably be the best ways to reach out to me.
If you got value from this episode, please do let Kevin know, as I'm sure he'll really appreciate it. Otherwise, Kevin, thanks again for being on the show, and everybody else, thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.
Thanks for inviting me. I've enjoyed it. Thanks.